This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 4. Brian Hayes, Zero Dog Jeff O'Neill, Jamie Noodles McLennan. We've got Nick Nurse coming up in about a half an hour. Ask him if he's still watching the games. You know, that was a fun game last night, Miami. They take a 3-1 lead in that series, and Tyler Herro went off last night, 37 points and 20 years old, coming off the bench, putting up numbers. He was born in the year 2000, which is really depressing.
What a great name.
Hero. Perfect name. Don't be a hero.
Hero.
Yeah.
Like,
well, he is being a hero, though. Now it's like, yeah, I'm betting on myself, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Everyone's trying to equate him to the Fred VanVleet plan.
I love when guys say that.
He went 13th overall in the draft. 13th. Fred VanVleet did not get drafted. Fred had to go play in the G League.
The team was betting on you when they drafted you there.
Yeah. You went 13th overall to a playoff team, and you're playing big minutes in the playoffs because you're a good player. Like, you went off last night.
Right.
He had a great night, but I just the forced, you know, I believed in myself kind of stuff post game. It's like, I hope so. Yeah. He went 13th overall.
Yeah, he was being a hero. That's what it was.
Being a hero. Very appropriately named. Being a hero. Tyler Herro. And I guess LeBron is being a hero, too, in the Lakers. They're complaining that he's not going to the line enough. So they've made like a formal complaint that LeBron James
like
is not getting fouled enough.
Quit flapping around like that. I think, honest to God, I think refs are staring at that going, you're embarrassing yourself in the game. And I know, listen, the guy's the best player in the game, arguably, of all time. But you'll get calls. Like, I hated that the other day.
Oh, the flopping.
Hated that.
And he went to the line after he drew the flagrant foul from Murray. But I looked up his numbers last night. Now, he has not gone to the line a ton through three games. He went to the line 4 times in game one, 4 times in game two, and only twice in game three. But throughout the playoffs, he is 13. He ranks 13th in the playoffs in free throw attempts per game. And there are only three players left on the list that are still currently playing. That is Davis's teammate, Jimmy Butler, and Jason Tatum. So he's still fourth in terms of all the players remaining in the bubble for free throw attempts per game. It's not like he's getting completely hosed. You know, it might just be a three-game swoon. But I wouldn't be shocked if he went to the line 10 or 12 times tonight, because when LeBron complains,
that's
the league.
Message.
Yeah, it does. So I don't even blame them. Like, from a sportsmanship standpoint, I think it's kind of goofy and ridiculous to formally complain. But I think they understand that they're probably going to get away with it, and they're probably going to get hooked up. I wouldn't be shocked if he goes to the line, you know, 4 times in the first quarter tonight. So, we'll see.
Where are you at? Where do you think that it's tied, or they go 3-1 tonight?
I would lean Lakers, but I thought that last game too, right? Like, this Nuggets team is resilient, and I can't imagine Denver, with how confident they should be, you know, in any circumstance in the playoffs because of what happened with Utah and the Clippers. I don't think they want to try to make that slipper fit a third time. You go down 3-1 again, you know, probably not coming back. Probably not going to make that magic happen a third time. So feels kind of like a must-win again for Denver tonight. So we'll see. And Jays in action, looking to clinch playoff spot for the first time since 2016. Rio on the mound. Pearson has been activated. So Nate Pearson, we might see him for an inning tonight. We'll certainly see him a couple times between now and the end of the weekend, because they're going to want him to get some action before game one next Tuesday, when the playoffs begin.
And it's pretty exciting.
Pretty exciting.
Think about it. That's playoff. Regardless of how it's happened, the Jays are
they're going to be there. Yeah.
It's awesome.
The old "if I told you back when" scenario certainly applies here. I mean, has it been a perfect season? No. Are they a great team? No. They're mediocre, but who cares?
What is the scenario looking like going forward? Is it like the play-in game, or is it a series, or what the hell are
they doing?
It'll
be a three-game wild card series. So they're likely going to play Tampa. They might play Chicago. Yeah, it's not, you know, it's best 2 out of 3. And I believe the top seed has home field advantage for all three games, even though there aren't fans, but they will bat second. And, you know, that all the rules and regulations that apply to a home team will not be granted to the Blue Jays. They will be the road team for all three games. And, you know, they're going to be an underdog. Whoever they play, they're going to be an underdog. And once Ryu is not on the mound, you're going to get nervous about Walker in game two, likely Shoemaker in game three, how the bullpen's going to add up. But if the bats come alive, and they have been recently, your boy Al's brother Kirk is going to DH tonight. Danny Jansen's been going off. He had a few big hits last night. So if Jansen gets hot, Vladdy can get going, you hope. Bo Bichette continues to settle in. Hernandez is back. You know, all of a sudden you get a lineup where if they can hit a bit of a heater, and it won't be easy against pitching like Tampa's, if that's who they play, but crazier things have happened. You know, if you can win one round, it's free money, right?
Right.
You win one round, you're ecstatic if you're affiliated with the team or if you're part of the fan base. Joining us now on the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our good buddy, longtime NHLer, TSN hockey analyst Dave Poulin. How you doing, Pooley?
Doing great, Brian. As you say, crazier things have happened, and you're talking about the Jays being in the playoffs in the same sentence.
Yep, that's right.
How do you even separate those two things?
That's kind of difficult, right? They get conflated pretty easily, I think.
Holy smokes.
Yep, that's
for sure.
Wow,
it is absolutely crazy, but good to be joining you.
Yeah, it's great to have you, buddy. What do you make of the Cup Final and the Stamkos story last night? How did you, I guess, embrace that whole show last night?
Yeah, it was tremendous. It really was. You know, you're trying to draw some sort of an analogy to anything you've been through. And the closest I came, and Ray actually told the story from his point of view, because Ray was playing for the other team at the time, was bringing Ray Bourque back for a game seven in the Boston Garden after he hadn't played in the series. And we didn't know he was going to skate. He wasn't in the morning skate, hadn't skated at all. And apparently decided to go down to the rink at like 3 o'clock and see how it was feeling, and decided he was ready to go, but he didn't tell any of us. And so we went out for the warm up, and then he dressed right after that, and then came out and joined us late in the warm up.
What was his injury, Pooley?
It was like a deep thigh contusion. And so he was on crutches, like right up to the time. Oh, and I remember Ray telling the story, because in the old Boston Garden, you came through the visiting team's end, right, to come on the ice for warm-up. And so, you know, the gates are closed, and Ray's like, great, the gates are all closed, you know, Bourque's out. And, you know, all of a sudden the guys are opening the gates in the middle of their warm-up, and Bourque is steaming right through the middle of them. And I just remember the emotional lift from our standpoint, because we really, honestly, guys, did not know he was playing. A little bit different last night with Stamkos, and you know, I had that surgery in 91, I think the same surgery that he had, the, you know, the core muscle. And honestly, like 2 months before I actually played a game, I thought I was ready to come back. I kept thinking I was ready. So it didn't surprise me that, you know, he was skating, but wasn't quite sure. And then when he comes back and, you know, we're doing the game, but unfortunately we're not sitting together and we're doing it. So Owen and I are texting back and forth, and you know, the other guys are involved. And just when he scores that goal, I think, you know, you're texting as fast as you can. I think there were five wows that went out at the exact same time.
Yeah, there was. It's just, Pooley, are you on board with this not going any further? Like, he just gave it a shot, and nobody can really see him putting a uniform on again. That was his moment in the Stanley Cup Final.
I would not be surprised if he didn't play again at all. And, you know, and I don't mind the thought process either of coming in game three. It wasn't like he was expected to be the savior. It was probably a perfect time. And as I just told you, I mean, it was literally 2 months for me when I said, yeah, I'd wake up in the morning, yeah, I think I'm ready to go. And then by noon, I'd be like, no, not a chance. And at 4 o'clock, well, I think I'm ready again. And then at 5 o'clock, no, not a chance. So he's been going through that. So I think, you know, the medical opinion would have been, look, you can't hurt yourself anymore. Pick a time to give it a try. Perfect time. The start of game three, whatever you bring in this, and then also leave yourself some runway. So if you come back and it feels perfect, hey, you know, you can still be a significant factor in this series. And it's pretty clear what he would have brought. We didn't even get there on the power play or see that at all. But listen, he could load up on one leg on that power play if it came down to a game seven. So I don't think we'll see him again, but if it got to a game 7-0, I wouldn't be surprised.
With Dave Poulin, so we're less than 2 weeks away from the draft and just over 2 weeks away from free agency. So every other team involved, you know, the other 29, and I guess in a way 30, because Seattle's kind of entering into the league this year in a weird way. They're not going to be playing, but they're going to be tracking things and putting together a list for the expansion draft a year from now. When it comes to free agents, we've had this discussion. I think the high-end guys are going to get paid and likely get paid quick. I think the lower-end guys, the cheaper guys, will likely go relatively quick too. The mid-level free agents, do you think they're in trouble in terms of what they're hoping for, what they want, and maybe how quickly they get signed?
Absolutely, I do, Brian. They are. They just flat out are. Particularly in term, like I can't see why, if you're a team with the uncertainties involved right now, would you go term on anybody unless you got such a great deal that you said, look, we have to sign this guy for 5 years. The numbers are so good. But, you know, if I'm a player now and I'd made some money, so say, you know, I mean, conservatively, you've got guys that have made, what, $30, $40 million that are in the market now. Would you not bet on yourself and go short term and try and win somewhere? And, like, you've already got your really nice house and your cottage and your car and your really nice sneakers, and you got some serious dough in the bank. This was going to be your big contract, but it's not going to be, or potentially not going to be. Boy, oh, boy, you know, the two guys that did it, Correa and Solani, back in 2003, when they both rolled the dice and went to Colorado for the one-year deals. Like, if I'm an agent advising some of these guys, why not be confident? Pick a team, pick a Colorado, pick a Vegas, pick somebody who's got no money. Go there, you know, get paid your $1 million and bet on yourself for a year. And mm-hmm. and then re-enter the market in a year or 2 years or 3 years when the money's back, you know, to full swing. And I just think, you know, if everybody's going to complain to me on the management side that there's no money out there, why would I sign a long-term deal if I'm a player at a much lower rate? When, you know, 4 years from now, if there's money back in the market, or 3 years from now, but you got to be confident in yourself too, and confident in your abilities, and confident where you're going. And, you know, it's almost like what these basketball players do. Okay, three of us are going to meet in Miami for lunch, and by the way, we'll stay and play for a couple of years. You know, and we'll win, and then we'll go our separate ways. And I could see that happening more. The other thing I could see, guys, is teams walking away from qualifying offers. I think that's a really understated thing right now, that, you know, if you're not certain about a guy and his qualifying offer is $3 million or $2.5 million, and you're not quite certain about it, and you're not certain what else might be better out there in the market at cheaper, there's going to be some sleepless nights around these dates, the QO date and the UFA date, because as a manager, if you're a manager on the West Coast, you're getting up at 5 a.m. or 4 a.m. to start to beat the market and see who's going where and who might slip in and who's going to pop free. And I think it's going to be a year. If you're going to symbolize one word, if you're going to pick one word to symbolize the year, I think it will be change.
Pooley, before you came on, we were having a, you know, kind of a debate about if Ottawa wanted to get crazy. And, you know, they've got the two picks, they've got some young players coming, and, you know, Hayes said if they wanted to throw some money at some players, they could shape their team pretty nicely, I would imagine. And I got a little crazy saying, well, I've got two moves for you. Sign Markstrom to term, and there you got your goaltender, and offer sheet Cirelli. Now, I may have overstepped because I'm not sure if you believe he's a one or a two. O thinks he's a two. Hayes thinks he's a two. I think he's a bit of a hybrid. Well, I think he's a bit of a hybrid, but I think he's a 25-goal guy. Like, he had 16 goals last year in 68 games and 44 points. Like, I think he's going to be a 50-point guy for sure. But do you believe there's going to be a maybe an offer sheet or two that a team, you know, could be targeting just based on this market? You know, a guy like Bergevin does it again. If Ottawa wants to get crazy, you know, it seems like if you want to spend money, you may be able to do it in this marketplace.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think Cirelli's a one or will ever be a one offensively. He'd be actually a lower end two for me, like a really good defensive guy. I don't think you're going to get the offense even that, you know, you get from a really good two. But boy, oh boy, that's the player and that's the team, because they're going to be in an unbelievable squeeze. And, you know, it's the old – I was thinking about this because the last kind of mid-level – not mid-level, but young player to get offer sheeted, was it not Ryan Kesler way back when in Vancouver?
Aho did a, last year, didn't he?
No. Yeah. But, I mean, the lower-level guy. Oh, like, I think he got offer sheeted by Philly at, like, $1.9 million
or
something.
Yeah, it was $1.9 million, yeah.
Yeah, which was, you know, coming out of an entry-level deal back then was significant. But so not the Staro, not the Ajos, not those guys, but the lower tier guys who were on cap teams, and I haven't, you know, I'm just digging into the cap situations now, but Vegas has to have one or two of those guys, don't
right,
they?
Yeah.
You know,
right.
That's coming out, that's a, you know, so say he's coming out and whatever his RFA position is, and you go to $2.8 million or something to that effect, where it's not going to cost you a lot. But believe me, these teams don't have $200,000 to spend, some of these teams that are so tight against it, let alone $2 million or $2.8 million. So I think that's where, you know, I'm back to the RFA side of it. Not only teams not qualifying, but who's a really good young player like that? And Cirelli would be right in that wheelhouse for me.
Quickly, before we let you go, what about the Leafs? What plan of attack do you expect to see out of them for the next 2 weeks?
You know, I don't see the Petrangelo thing going, guys. I just don't. I've hit those numbers really, really hard. Unless you're changing your team and changing your philosophy dramatically. And if you're doing those things, you can do anything you want. But the numbers just flat out don't work. And, you know, they just don't. I mean, you're compressed so much. Right now, you know, you have three defensemen signed that are going to play in the NHL next year, for sure. Jake Muzzin, Morgan Rielly, and Justin Hall. And guys, I think Justin Hall is a 5'6". Like, he's typecast
so
as a 3'4".
Yep.
Right.
He's not a 3'4". He's not. And so now, you know, just pure numbers, I had them at $9.3 million with 9 forwards signed, 3 defensemen, and 2 goalies. Now, that doesn't include Mikhaev, and it doesn't include Dermott. And $9.3 million. Like, that's what you've got left. So you're talking some dramatic change in order to make things happen. And if that's the case, you know, Kyle Dubas so far has been unwavering in the way he thinks he wants to build a hockey team and in his philosophy. And he's really stuck to it, guys. He hasn't wavered from it. I don't see him wavering now in order to restructure his entire group.
Always appreciate it, Pooley. We'll do it again soon. Thank you, buddy.
Okay, guys. Have a great day. Thanks.
Dave Pullen, our TSN hockey analyst here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. It's Maple Toyota's birthday, and they're giving you the gifts this month. Buy any new vehicle and receive a free gift. Red tag savings continue with rates from 0%. Yeah, I do think it's kind of an existential moment here for Dubas because, you know, the three guys, the big guys at the top aren't going anywhere, I don't think.
Right.
You know, Matthews not going anywhere. Tavares not going anywhere. And I don't think Marner's going anywhere. But you know, Nylander, whether you believe that he guaranteed him or promised him he wouldn't trade him or not, I don't know if that's true. I don't know how you could possibly expect that to continue for your whole career, even if you are a very good player like William Nylander. But the numbers right now don't add up for Petrangelo and filling out your roster. But that doesn't mean you can't make that work if you start getting crazy with shipping out other players. Right? Like if you bring in, and even just with Nylander alone, and I know people are very sensitive to it because his name's always up. But if you look at it like a 4-year window, which is what Matthews has left and what Nylander has left, Nylander's got 4 years left, then he's a UFA. He might walk, right? Yeah. He may leave. That would be his right. He can do whatever he wants. If you're looking at a 4-year window where you feel like you've got to win a cup or compete for a cup now, who do you think is going to have a bigger impact on your team over 4 years? Alex Petrangelo or William Nylander?
I think that's an obvious question, don't
exactly.
you? Exactly. Petrangelo.
Of right. course it is. So
it
that's
is.
The point. So if you can get him, and that means you've got to move money out, and it's got to be Nylander for other pieces or for cap relief plus, you know, picks, prospects, whatever it might be, that is a philosophy that would make sense in terms of building your hockey team.
Agreed.
And that's, as a GM, you have to think like that. Doesn't mean it's going to happen. Petrangelo might sign with St. Louis tomorrow. But
right.
if he's there on October 9th and he says, I'm interested and I'll come for this, that, or the other, and you think we can make that work if we do this, that, or the other,
right?
Then you're talking drastic change, right? Like it has to be just based on the cap. You don't want to. Why would you want to trade very good players, or move on from very good players. No one wants to do that.
Well,
it's not
like
personal.
The way you look at it there. What guy's going to bring you the most in the next 4 or 5 years? Or 3 or 4 years?
4 years. It's a 4-year Austin Matthews bubble. You know, that's
right.
What it is. He's
wheelhouse,
got 4 years
yep.
left. That wheelhouse, 4 years. Who knows what happens beyond that? Willie's got 4 years left on his deal. So you got 4 years. That's your window. You got to win a cup or at least compete for one and go kind of all in at that point for 4 years. Who is going to put you in the best position to win a cup in the next 4 years? That is how Kyle Dubas has to be thinking right now. What do I have to do? And if you got to get ruthless, you got to get ruthless.
Well,
talk to Masai Ujiri about that.
Absolutely. But it's not even about being ruthless. It's about, you know, understanding where your team is at and where you believe you can take them. I think Kyle wants to build a contender that's there every year with this group, which is fine. And I think every manager is trying
garbage,
to do that.
Jamie,
I
being
understand
there
that.
Every year. That just anybody that says that, it's just a crock of absolute garbage because things happen. You can't be there every year.
But
it's just,
okay,
you can be good every year, but you're not going to be there every year, as we saw with Tampa Bay last year. It's just you got to try to put the best team out every year. To say you want to build something long term, it's just not possible in today's sports.
But the Washington Capitals, for example, were very good for a long time, and what they did was shape around you commit to your core, and then you find who works in a particular year for that group. And I think that's what he's trying to do. But getting back to what Brian's saying at some point, to make the numbers work, you may have to throw somebody from that core overboard to make it work. And obviously everyone's like, well, William Nylander's the easy choice. For me, it's not easy because he's a very good player, but I don't see him as super elite. I just see him as a really good player. So that's what makes it maybe a little bit easier than looking at Marner's scenario or Tavares' scenario.
And this is also a different context, right?
Right.
Like, there's always been a battle in the marketplace about every single player. And Nylander may be more polarizing than the other guys. How people feel about him, what they want to see out of him, what they love about him.
The apologists in this market about him it's gross.
There are a lot of people that go over the top and I think overemphasize his actual production and ability.
Yeah.
But there are also people on the other end that think he sucks or something, which is equally as ludicrous. He's a very good player. But the difference with this context, if it is aligned to Pietrangelo, what makes this difference different is before it was, well, Nylander can't work here, or I don't like Nylander.
Right.
It has nothing to even do with Nylander. It would have everything to do with who you're adding to the core, which is Alex Pietrangelo. It's improving your team, and as a result, something else has to happen. So it's not, you know, we've turned on Willie, or the media ran him out of town. No, that's not what would be happening here. It would be simply, look at how good of a player we can get here, so now we have to make a really tough decision.
Yep.
And as a result, because of the numbers and because of the cap was looser. If there was no cap, this wouldn't be an issue. But there is. It's a hard cap, and there's going to be no flexibility for the next 2 or 3 years. So how do you build the best possible team to go after? It'd be ideal if you go after 4 Cubs, but not realistic. Can you get one in the next 4 years? What team can you put together that is going to give you the best chance of winning a Cup?
Right.
Over the next 4 years. And that's for Kyle Dubas to figure out. You know, that's his job. But it better not be based on loyalty. It better not be based on promises made or I like this guy or I drafted that guy. Again, Masai Ujiri put forth the blueprint. Things have to change every once in a while. Tough decisions have to be made. Relationships have to be broken off. Feelings are going to get hurt. But are we in this to just feel good and clap in the stands and see a team that gets knocked out in the first round every year? Or do you want to win something? That's what you got to ask yourself.
Yeah. And O brought it up. Like, it's the Masai Ujiri. You brought it up, Brian. Like, you got to be ruthless. Like, if it's...
Yeah, you tell a guy you're going to be there as long as I'm there, maybe that's not the case.
Maybe Pietrangelo, like, very different player, very
it's
different
like
game.
Kawhi?
Maybe he's the Kawhi. Guess what? He came available, so things had to change. And he said he'd be willing to come here, and he's exactly what we need, and he's more impactful than this player, that player, the other player. So our plan changed, right?
Yeah, that's true.
Like, plans change. You have to make adjustments on the fly. And this is not a team that can feel overly confident about the situation that they're currently in. I think they can feel confident in a lot of their group. Like, they still have talent. They're a playoff team, right? They're not a disaster or anything like that. They're, right. But they can't feel like Tampa feels right now, right?
No.
Or
no.
Even like Vegas might feel right now, or Colorado might feel. Like, there are teams that they're chasing, Boston, right. Washington, et cetera, that are also going to try to improve. So, yep. You know, let's see.
I agree.
Let's see where it takes us. Nick Nurse coming up. Speaking of a guy that, you know, basically defined drastic change, Coach of the Year goes out for Nick Nurse. And since he's taken over, won a championship, won Coach of the Year, and now has a new contract. We'll catch up with Nick Nurse next.
Love everyone at work, but having technical difficulties. So thanks for all your help and tips from everyone, but it's just not working out. So it's voice only for now. Thank you very much.
Yeah, what happened there? I saw your point at your
Well, dude,
camera.
All I can hear is my camera. All I can hear is Billy Dodson and Gino Retta and Darren Dreger talking. I'm like, okay, thanks, guys. Have fun at That's Hockey, but we're trying to do a radio show here. So I just said, that's it. Thank you very much. Voice only.
Yeah, you're both out. Noodles
well,
and
I'm staring
Trust
into
me,
the camera.
Trust me, it's for the better.
I'm fine because it was the same thing. I could hear Dreger and Gino talking about, you know, stuff. And I'm like, it was frustrating me because that's what happened yesterday. I was talking and all of a sudden I'm like, who the hell is talking in the background?
Yeah, Grappler gave me great advice. He goes, what's wrong? I go, I can hear Gino and those guys. He goes, turn that off. I go, oh, thanks.
Thanks, Tips.
Yeah, thanks. I haven't been trying to do that.
Yeah, it's very
anyway,
helpful.
We're not going to let it bother us. We're going to, like Nick Nurse would make us do, he'd make us battle through it and be better for it.
Yeah, do you think he's a big pep talk guy? I don't know if he's a pep talk guy. Like, I wonder what the speech was before Game 7. Was it a bubble pep talk?
Remember Orlando last year? I think he said he just teed off on the fellas and said, I don't want to show a bunch of tapes or whatever. He just said.
That was after Game 1, yeah.
Yeah.
It seemed to work pretty well, I guess.
Maybe we need Nick to give me and Noodles a little pump up to just our audio's all jacked up. We're a mess. We need to hear something for us to battle through.
All right, here he is, the head coach of the Raptors, Nick Nurse. Are you a pep talk guy?
Not in the off season, not at all. What's the matter, guys? Okay, what's going on, man?
Well,
you guys
it's 2020, man. There's always we're trying to do radio and TV from home, and it's just every once in a while there's a technical issue. You know that.
Yeah. It's not. It's tough out there right now. All these Zoom press conferences and Zoom, all this stuff, man. It's tough, right?
Yeah.
Did you do your contract for through Zoom, or was there any face-to-face involved with that, Nick?
No, we were together in the bubble, so it was easy. We were a little too close for comfort down there, to be honest with you. It was good.
Well, I mean, congratulations. It's well-deserved, needless to say. I mean, you've been on quite the run. You win a championship. You win Coach of the Year. Now you get a nice contract, big payday. How would you compare all those emotions? How do they all add up into one? And what have you made of this ride through 2 years?
Well, winning it for sure was the ultimate. You know, I don't think anything will ever come close to that. That was such a magical run experience, aftermath, all that stuff. And kind of proud of the way the guys played coming out of that. As well, you know, I think they played their guts out this year. But the rest of it, you know, it's like I've been here 7 years. I love it. You know, there's nothing not to love or ownership or organization or fans or country city. I mean, it's a amazing deal. It's time for a new contract, and it was really simple on both sides for us to do. And I'm really, really happy and really grateful, you know.
Well, absolutely. And again, it's well deserved. When you consider the bubble experience and you just went through it for a long time and there's still four teams cooking down there, and one of them's going to win, and I guess they'll celebrate at the hotel and then they'll go back to their hometown and, I don't know, have a parade via Zoom with all their fans. The realities of today, does it make you appreciate last year that much more? You know, the fans, the parade, the lunacy of it all?
So I think it's got to, you know, I think that is what makes it special. And I think, you know, looking at our thing, you know, we had a game seven that should have been in downtown Toronto, mm-hmm. because we earned it. You know, all those tough West Coast wins on the road early in the year and late in the year, and all those, you know, that's what you fight for, is if you do end up at a game seven, you get to have it in your own building, and we didn't get to have it. So, yeah, man, geez, I hope we can get back to being able to do things with each other, you know, with the fans and with the fan base and in person sooner rather than later, that's for sure.
At any point, did you feel like you had some sort of a benefit from being a higher seed? Like, did the NBA offer up anything that made you feel like, okay, we earned this, we accomplished this, and yeah, we do feel like we've got some sort of leg up on the opposition because we're the higher seed?
Nope.
That's a bit disappointing, and it seems like they might have missed the mark on that one.
Yeah, I can't even sugarcoat it or even think of anything remotely close. The answer is nope, and I'm sticking with it.
Yeah, wow, that's disappointing. Nick Nurse here of the Raptors, when you consider, you know, the whole ride in the bubble and Game 7 in particular, like you said, you had the opportunity. I mean, it was a close game. It was right there. With everything you just said, do you feel like if you had that home court advantage, if that same game plays out in Toronto, do you feel like you're maybe playing Miami tonight or tomorrow night?
I think it, like you already said it. Now that game, the way it was, could have went either way. I mean, I've already said that late free throw line foul on Norman Powell could have easily gone the other way, probably should have gone the other way, and he'd have been shooting two free throws to tie it with, you know, 40 seconds to go. So it would have been anybody's ball game. But, you know, and it gets play. That's playoff basketball, though, right? We had a couple balls bounce our way in years past. Mike Conley has a three go in and out for Utah, or Denver would be home right now, and now look at them, mm-hmm. right? So it's kind of a lot of good teams, and games are close, and I don't know. I would have loved to have it at home, just because, you know, there's nothing like it, right? There's nothing like people in the streets and the vibe in the city and everything when you got a game seven, a big playoff game at home in Toronto.
Well, we believe that you guys would have won had you been in Toronto. I think the vibe and everything. So, you know, we can't look back at that. But I did want to look back at one thing and ask a question. You know, you're coaching, you're in the heat of the moment, and Jason Tatum almost throws the ball to you. And I know it's not an illegal move. You know, you're on the outline or on the outskirts of the line, but your reaction was almost like, did you think at some point, like, hey, I'm pretty close, and he might have thought that I was an option? Or because you just walked away back to the bench, and it almost said to me, like, hey, nothing to see here. I was just calling to my players or whatever, like that transaction. Like, what was going through your mind when the ball whipped right by you?
Yeah, that's one of those day after things a lot. I mean, like, I didn't even realize it at all that when it happened. It was just, you know, to me, it was, I mean, Tice was standing right next to me, and he just threw an errant pass, I think. I don't think he was really trying to throw it to me, but yeah, I just was down there fighting, trying to get my guys to play defense. And then obviously I saw how, you know, everybody was talking about it the next day. Like, I was doing it on purpose, and I wore green pants and all that stuff. And it was pretty hard for me not to wear those green pants for game seven, but I thought I probably better not. But it wasn't much to it, you know, from my standpoint. I was just coaching the game.
Yeah.
With Nick Nurse of the Raptors, he's got a new deal. He's going to be here for quite some time, and he's joining us here on Overdrive. So when you look back, I was going to leave that for O, but I think O's just completely disconnected.
Yeah, he fell off. You want
yeah,
to talk about
technology,
he's gone.
Yeah, he's gone. He's out. So it's a two-man ship here. You're stuck with the two of us here, Nick. It's not a three-pack of guys anymore. But what about watching the games? You know, I find that always interesting, talking to players and coaches that are out of the playoffs. Some of them just can't do it. Are you a guy that's going to watch tonight? Were you watching last night? How are you reacting to the playoffs still being on?
Yeah, I'm having a harder time putting it on. I am watching a little more of the Western Conference. I'm just like a lot of Canada. I'm in love with Jamal Murray. Right? Mm-hmm. Watching what he's doing, and it's so awesome to watch. I'm having a little harder time turning on the Eastern Conference. I don't have a very good taste in my mouth about that, and I don't want to really bring that back. So I'm going to let that roll out until later. But I'll keep watching the Western Conference.
With Nick Nurse, how does this align with your Canadian duties? I know you're still locked in to be their coach for a couple of years, and hopefully you guys get to the Olympics next summer. Hopefully there will be an Olympics. But does it kind of keep you locked in on that job a little bit more, or make it a little bit easier that you're still going to be here in Toronto working with the Raptors and kind of in the Canadian territory to be able to follow everything and know what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, I hope it's a long-term gig. You know, I think with the extension and being here with the Raptors, it will enable me certainly to have a chance at you know, coaching the national team. I think that is a long-term project that we're putting together. There's a lot of talent in the youth side of it as well. So trying to bring that all up from the younger ages on. But it was good. The bubble, that's one good thing about the bubble. I did get to see a lot of the guys and, you know, bump into them a lot more frequently just walking down the hotel hallway or in the lobby or whatever. And it was nice to be able to do that. And they were all very, very positive about playing for the national team and excited for it. And I'm with you. I hope there is a Tokyo. We need Tokyo to happen at some point before we can get there. And hopefully that'll, you know, we'll all keep our fingers crossed for that.
I agree. Nick, did you, I guess maybe learn a little bit more about your team or your group being in the bubble, being that close, kind of seeing the day-to-day, maybe how guys lived away from the court, you know, just being kind of trapped in that scenario? Did you learn maybe something that you didn't know about some of the younger guys that either you liked or would like to maybe change in the off season?
I don't know that's true or not. I think if I look at it all, it was a great coaching kind of atmosphere. Right. There was, you know, you just literally won't leave your room and 5 minutes you're in on a court, you know, down in the convention center, and the players, you can get them together. The young guys were awesome. They really did a lot of work on their game and their skills, you know, in between days of games. The games were every other day, and we were playing a pretty short team. So the vets weren't doing much other than rehabbing and, you know, just trying to restore their energies. I don't know. I was impressed with our young guys, the way they were working for the future. That's one thing I would say.
With Nick Nurse, so you've got your new deal. We'll get you out of here on this. You were working on the details, and you're going to be sticking around for a while. But the point man on the MLSE side, Masai, you know, he's not locked in long-term yet. He's got 1 year left on his deal, and the anxiety in the city, it cooled off when you locked in, but now people focus on Masai. Were you in full court press mode yourself? I mean, would that come up during your negotiations, the future of Masai?
We didn't really talk about it much. I think that, you know, Masai, Bobby, and myself all came in, you know, 7 years ago together. I mean, I was only an assistant then, but we certainly make a good team. I think we all have a lot of confidence. Certainly a ton of mutual respect for each other and kind of feel like we'll be moving forward. Unless something, you know, super spectacular happens to one of the three of us, we'll all be moving forward together, you know? And if that something spectacular happens, we'll be happy for the other guy, you know?
Yep, I think that's well put. And I think we'll put a positive spin on that. All right, we'll take it and we'll run with it. You know how we roll here, Nick.
Okay. All right, guys.
Congrats on the new deal. Enjoy the offseason. We'll do it again down the road. Thank you for this.
Okay, thanks for having me on.
You got it. Nick Nurse. I think that's a good sign with Masai. Yeah. I mean, something, what did he say, super spectacular happens,
yeah,
which you know, who knows what that might be, what kind of opportunity we're talking about. But he brings up a good point that the three of them have been, you know, linked here and working together for a long time, and that cohesion is incredibly important. You know, people yeah. throw out the word culture all the time, and they can't back it up. They can't find anything to, you know, I guess point to that is finite, you know, that you look at and tangible, and you're like, that's what I'm talking about. But this is an example of it. Masai, right. Webster, Nurse, three of them have been working together for 7 years. The past 2 years, they've been running the whole shop, and I would say it's been the greatest 2 years in the history of the franchise.
For sure.
So
for sure.
If you can lock them all in and keep that together and keep it moving in the right direction, that is music to the ears of any Raptor fan. Jabari Greer coming up. Role play level of concern, although I will say I'm going Nick Cage right now on whether or not we're ever going to see or hear from the O-Dog again.
Can you idiots not hear me?
No, I can't.
Can't.
Dude, you've
now.
Been just wiped off the screen. I'm looking. All I see is me and Noodle, so I assume you're gone. I don't know if you're there. And I left. I was waiting for you to jump in. I did the reset, and I let it sit, and you just went dark on me. And
I had two great questions from Nick Nurse, and you two are just stomping all over me. And then I said, let me have the last one. I was going to ask him, what was it like to finally leave the bubble and get out into real life, be back with family, blah, blah, blah. My second question was going to be, exit meetings, what kind of conversation did you have with Pascal Siakam? That was left out of the interview, and I thought it was an important part.
That would have been.
I was here to offer that, and then it's just a bozo show. No, I'm completely taken off the screen. The other time I said hello, I was about to start talking, and then
we couldn't hear
you,
man. Where you've been off,
Bruce Boudreau, and I'm on it. I'm on an email chain with Nick Caroli, and he's, you know, it's saying like Jamie can hear Gino talking, Jamie can hear this, O-Dog, and then the guy writes back and goes, O-Dog's gone. So I'm like, all right, he's gone. So he's hung up and thrown.
Yeah, don't try to. No more. Just leave that picture, that ugly picture of me up there.
Yeah, I don't know why it was ever taken off. Like that.
Exactly. I don't know either.
I don't know either. Because you got to understand, that's like we're all at home here. I assume when you're off that, I'm like you're disconnected and gone.
Yeah.
Like
I should have just went to Collingwood. But I'd like to work, and I don't need emails saying you're mailing it in. Where were you? Blah, blah, blah. And I had good questions.
Yeah, those were very appropriate. Very good.
I could not be a part of the interview, and I'm pissed off about that.
I was trying to be positive. I didn't want, to go after. I got the vibe early on that he was like, hey, I'm in the off season here, guys. I don't, you know, I just want to BS a little bit. Now, Hayes asked the couple good Larry King questions.
It was outrageous, but
no,
I think.
But good. Like
I think the Siakam one was a very good question, but I think he would have just fully supported him. He has done that publicly. He did that in his presser, you know, on the way out. He did it today. But the bubble one was a good one. That one we missed. Noodles and I, it was a two-man show, Harry and Lloyd, and we turn right, and next thing you know, we're in Oklahoma, and we could have used you. You were the scooter, buddy. We could have used you. 75 miles to the gallon with that hog on the right side of the screen, the O-Dog, the O-Cat. All right, role play level of concern. No more Nick caging it because the O-Dog is here. And Jabari Greer in the next hour. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app. All right, role play level of concern coming up. And there we are. We're all back up on TV.
They fixed it.
Yeah, the O-Dog's back.
Grapplers was my favorite. Turn it off. Thanks.
Yeah. Well, technology.
I'm hearing things from a totally different part of the building. Yeah, turn that off. Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. Rick Wilde. He's the Rick Wilde of producers.
It combines class-winning, leading, technology and stuff.
Carol Baskin's Rick Wilde, the Grappler.
Hey, I'll tell you, the Grappler is pretty popular. I did, AK messaged me, I did a little Zoom chat with the Centennial Sports Journalism. Class of 2020 today.
Right.
And the Grappler was on before me.
The Grappler's a go-to guest, a speaker. That's not even a guest. That's a speaker.
He's a speaker.
Way more dignified.
I think he nailed it out of the park because, I mean, they did ask me some questions. Apparently the class is a fan of the show, so I do have to give them a shout out.
Okay, shout out. There you go.
Good people, the next generation of people to be on the show with us.
But absolutely.
One of them was Al's brother's best buddy, and he asked me about Al's brother.
Well,
like, what do you think of Al's brother? I'm like, yeah,
that's
a
greasy
great
move in a Zoom call. It's a greasy move.
Yeah, like the rest of the class wants to know about Al's brother.
How is Al's brother cool?
You think of anything more annoying? Yeah. You just want to get out of this class. Yeah. And
some guy's got a hot date for lunch. Is Al's brother cool? Oh, okay.
He was pretty cool, though, the guy was.
It
was
I'm
Al's
sure he's a nice
friend.
Enough guy, but it's just an outrageous question.
Outrageous to take up that airspace for that question.
Al's brother, what's he like in real life?
Oh. Do you ever see Al's brother?
Yeah.
Are you going
Does he
to
really
see
wear
Al's
the
brother?
Turtleneck? Does he wear the turtleneck?
Yeah.
Johnny, sit down in the back.
It's like, okay, we get it. You know Al's brother.
Yeah.
Thank you. Love Al's brother, but we've got to continue.
Not for Zooming, yeah. Mister.
We don't want to leave the grappler waiting. We've got to move on here. Come on now.
Grappler should have intervened. That question is inappropriate.
Inappropriate
next,
and unacceptable. All right, final hour. Role, play level of concern in Jabari Greer on week 3 in the NFL tonight. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050 and on the TSN app.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Accepted-ated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA License 12616.
This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.